Hello and welcome to The Garden Show. This is Kitty LaBounty.
I'm Molly Kabler. We're delighted to be here in the studio with you this morning. And we'll even try and take your call. We would love your call. We have had some technical stuff, but we're going to give it another round after learning our lessons, we think. 747-5877 is the number to give it a try. We're going to talk about what do you do in early June today. That's really what it's all about.
And yes, I got back from a little trip and I was like, okay, what I had to do was spend a lot of time weeding, to be honest with you. I don't have a huge variety of weeds, but I was like, the chickweed's taken off, a few little things like that. So yeah, it took me a good few hours to get my maybe overly large garden kind of tidied up, but it was mostly weeds and then a little bit of feeding.
It's that time of year too when the creeping buttercup is really trying to take over the world. World domination, of course, is its goal, and it's very good at that. So that's something I've been battling in my yard, as well as the chickweed. And if you're not sure what it is, it's that tiny small leaf plant, and it has a little spray of white flowers at the top these days.
And I try to get my weeds before they flower, honestly. And of all the weeds in my yard, the one that drives me the nuttiest is actually the creeping buttercup. And then the other things that drive me nutty in my yard are the ground covers that I brought in on my own. I brought them in voluntarily. In many cases, I paid for them. Oof. Gosh.
So what are a couple of the ones that are, we often have called these thugs. So who are your thugs at the moment?
Bishop's weed.
Yeah.
That's one that I just keep plucking out. I mean, the leaves are pretty. There's places I let it go in some areas, but I don't like its habit of like, oh, well, there's space there. I mean, it's a successful plant, but for me, it's a little bit too successful. The other one is the campanula, what we've called China Mary's flower. And what makes those plants so successful and such so aggravating is that they spread underground. It's not their flowers, it's not their seeds, it's there's territory. I'm going to conquer that territory and grow in it. Eek.
Yeah, I think sometimes it's called compacta, sometimes it's called glomerata if you're trying to figure out what we're talking about. Common names are confusing because we know them, but you might not know them. Anyway, I have that same problem. I pulled out yards, it feels like, of that plant. And the flowers are so stunning, but it is not worth the price. So when I get a chance, I'm going to try and really take that to nothing if possible. Because otherwise, the minute you turn your back, it's happening.
Oh, yeah. So some of the other ones that I have in my yard that actually don't bother me at all. I usually let them grow and I let them flower and I let them set seed and then I'll just rip them out by the handfuls. And those are ones that I actually like the flowers. So forget-me-nots are ones that, you know, I'll let them go and then I'll just start ripping them out. And there's plenty more to go next year. And then the native yellow violets set seed like madcaps and I let them. It's fine. And then if they're growing someplace I don't want them to, I pull them out. So there's a real difference in aggravation factor, whether a plant spreads by seeds or it spreads by underground roots. Huge for me.
Yeah, I would say the same. I love the forget-me-nots. And once they're just past like prime bloom, I start pulling those out as well and getting rid of them. The reason is they are prodigious seed producers. Mm-hmm. Oh my gosh, they create so many seeds. So it's really great to get those out before they go to seed. And same for me on the yellow wood violets. I love those and they are in my yard and I pull them out readily once they're kind of done. So yeah, same thing. And remember, I think this is a good time to sort of think about you're in charge. And you can be in charge of a lot of different things. You can be in charge of shaping bushes, especially anything that's already bloomed. Afterward is kind of a good time for some shaping. And you might just, I don't mean shape it to turn it into something, just shape it to not run over everything else that you're still trying to grow. So, you know, you're in charge that way. And then you're also in charge of the things like the campanula and these other plants that you love, but that are really successful and they're crushing out the other things. Another one that's actually happening in my yard at the moment, and I'm struggling with it, is columbines. I have quite a few columbines from seed right now. And I kind of like to see what they look like before right. I get them out, because the blue ones I'm kind of encouraging, and but they're taking over a few other areas to the point where, there are some other perennials under there that I'm not so sure I'm willing to let the columbine squish out.
Right. And what's fun about the columbines is that they hybridize like mad. You know, so you get all these really interesting crosses and colors if you let them go. But I do kind of cull them. If I see the flower and I don't like it, I'm like, okay, you're done. And I pull it out. A lot of them end up that I've seen like the most successful hybridization is the ones between the wild ones and some of the kind of more long spurred ones that are similar colors. So I have kind of softer colored red and yellow ones are kind of the dominant. The blue, the big blue flabellata type, doesn't seem to hybridize. I see every once in a while get a purple one in there. So I don't know if that one, if the blooming time isn't, overlapping enough to get a good or frequent hybridization. I think that one tends to bloom a little bit earlier, and then you get the other varieties. So they have to be blooming at the same time, or it's just not happening.
Yeah. Another weed that quite a few people can struggle with is Equisetum horsetail. And I read something that I hadn't read before recently, which is that you should just cut them off and burn them rather than trying to pull them. Because if you pull, you're breaking off bits of root, and every bit of root is a plant. But if you just cut them off and leave them, they won't regrow this year. Now, I don't know if I believe that yet, but it was some information from Jeff in the ADN, and he's a pretty experienced gardener with a long history of success, in Alaska. Now, I don't know if that's Anchorage, where it's considerably drier through the summer than here. But anyway, it was an interesting thought on horsetail, which, is a tough one to eliminate and can really take over large areas.
Right. That's a good experiment to try, actually. If you have horsetail, try just having an area where you just cut it off religiously. You don't let any green stuff happen, and see how it affects it. I'm like, where's the wood to knock on? I don't have horsetail in my garden. But I've been really pretty religious about when someone gives me a plant, regardless of who it is, everyone's well-intentioned. I put the plant in a pot and I let it sit in that pot for at least a season. And then I see what comes up. And then if it's clean, I'll put it in the garden.
Yeah. Speaking of clean, the other thing that can be coming on right now are the aphids, so keep an eye on that. And if, sort of going back to the columbine, sometimes they can suddenly be overrun by aphids. And if it's not a columbine you're loving, that might be the time that you're just going to take that and either burn it or put it right in the trash or something like that to eliminate, a huge infestation of aphids. Now, if you see a group of aphids taking on anything and you aren't ready to let that plant go, just a good sharp spray of water will knock it back, that the plant will probably be fine, probably make it.
Yeah, I kind of have this escalation. First I go with water, then I go with a little bit of soapy water, and then if that's not doing it, I use the ultra fine horticultural oil. But it doesn't get to the third level, but I move up to that if I need to. And where's the wood for me to knock on? I haven't had a really bad aphid year for a few years. But we haven't had a really warm, dry summer for a few years either.
One of the nice things about aphids, and it's pretty bizarre that I'm saying that, is that this is a great year for baby birds. I have a lot of baby birds in my yard. I watched a clutch of juncos hatch and fledge, And there's song sparrows and all sorts of things. And, that's the reason not to use any of the poisons or pesticides on the aphids or anything else in your yard. It's a great time to let those baby birds. They're going to love eating the aphids and the other creepy crawlers that you have. And then just a quick reminder, the black shiny beetles, those are your friends. They are eating small slugs in particular, and probably other things. And similar with spiders. Spiders are your friends as well. Okay, maybe you don't like them, but let them be your friends in the garden.
Yeah, no, it is really nice, but I watch when I like work through the bed. After I'm done with the bed, the parent sparrows and the baby sparrows go into the bed and, you know, pick up whatever is been kicked up. So they're there. The warblers are picking up all the small insects on the leaves and everything, and the chickadees. So it's like, it is really nice to have a garden that has, it's kind of a variety of spaces. So there's some big trees, there's some shrubs, there's vegetables, there's flowers. So there's little habitats for a variety of birds, and they are being my buddies. They are helping. I'm sure they eat the good guys too, but they are eating is the main point.
Yeah, the hummingbirds eat the aphids as well. We think of them as, you know, okay, we've just got to feed them with the sugar water, and we certainly can, and it's a wonderful way to enjoy them because you know where they're going to be. They're going to be at your feeder, and you put your feeder in a place that you can see them. But they also eat insects, and the aphids are about the just right size for those hummingbirds.
Yeah, there's quite a, if you wondered how those Anna's hummingbirds were hanging out here in the winter, they're eating insects. They're eating, you know, at a few people's hummingbird feeders too, but they're definitely getting that protein source. So yeah, keeping your garden safe and structured for both insects and for birds actually is pretty helpful. So besides weeding, one of the other things I was doing was checking plants to see if they were growing speedily enough that they needed a little boost, you know, in fertilizer. I'm sorry to report that most of them were kind of slow. I just feel like, oh gosh, I was gone for like almost 10 days and things seemed to be like, just like, they're kind of creeping along. I was like, I guess I could heal these potatoes. I mean, it's been slow.
Yeah.
It looked like it was pretty wet and cool the whole time I was gone. We had a few hot sunny days since then, but yeah, it has not, you know, produced those big May, June sunny days that we crave. Let's put it that way.
Exactly. And so does your garden. And I think that is part of the reason we're hearing a lot of questions about, what about my zucchinis? They all died. What about my yellow squash, my tomatoes? So that's been a significant topic of conversation around town and on the social medias. And I just would say that those are plants that you have to cover or have an extremely perfect site for to grow them here. And this is the year that's teaching us that again. So if we've had decent summers or a little bit drier or warmer summers, you may have gotten away with growing those plants and getting some productivity. But there are many a year that the only way you're going to actually get a zucchini, whether it's yellow or green or some other color or shape, is inside a hoop house or under a rime all season.
Right. So I actually just planted my zucchini when I got back. I actually usually put them in the soil. And while I was gone, I put a piece of clear plastic over where I was going to plant them. So I had that kind of warming going on in that soil. And then I put up this kind of aging structure of metal pieces and planted, you know, put a big pile of compost in, made a nice hill, planted the seeds, and then covered it with rime, covered it with the clear plastic in it, at least for a few more days. And I actually started building the side. So I have like scrap plastic that I put in the front and the back of this structure. And then eventually I'll cover it all the way over. And that's worked well for me for zucchini. But I have not had good luck with them otherwise. So, you know, we live in a cool summer climate, period. Underline and, you know, put exclamation marks on that. It's cold here.
And it's a combination of the air temperature and the soil temperature. So if you put your zucchinis in the ground a while ago, they were simply suffering because your soil temperatures were probably not warm enough either. So if you're interested in trying again, and we're all about going for it.
Oh, yeah.
Just know, you know, maybe not devote yards and yards of space to something that is questionable unless you've found your system, mm-hmm. you know. Yeah, it's not going to happen. And you're probably wise to keep them, pot them on a couple of times and keep them either in the house or
right.
in your greenhouse or whatever until they're well established. And then realize it's, you know, that's a risk too. So
right.
Anyway, we feel bad for you and your zucchinis and your tomatoes. This is a tough year. Now, there are people who are growing all different varieties, and there are always interesting mm-hmm. varieties being developed. I don't have any commitment to tomatoes, but I was given a couple that sound really interesting. And so I got them going in my greenhouse, and they're starting to bloom, which is slightly miraculous.
Well, I have a whole little pile of tomatoes, probably too many, but I grow them in my greenhouse. I probably started them in March. Seems like we had a cold snap in February, so I waited till after that cold snap, and then I planted them. So I have like Gold Nugget and Sweet Million and Sun Gold and Cherry Buzz and Sakura. So I have a variety. They're all cherry tomatoes because those are the ones that have worked well for me. They're all in the greenhouse. They all have flowers on them. And they're all indeterminate tomatoes, so they can kind of like go nuts. So I do a little bit of that sucker pruning that there's actually really good YouTube videos on how to prune the suckers on tomatoes. So I'd recommend that. It's hard for you to see my hands waving, but it's worthwhile doing. I don't grow any determinate tomatoes. I don't know why. I just don't. These varieties have worked for me, so I have them. And determinate tomatoes, you don't have to prune. I was talking with a gal here in town who has lots of determinate tomatoes, and it sounds like they got really leggy. And it could be wild that I suggested that she try pruning a few of them, just to see what would happen because they were so long. But in general, you don't have to prune those. They just grow, and then the whole plant flowers all at once. So it's a different style.
Yeah, so the determinate and indeterminate, it means a determinate sort of level of growth that it's going to get to. That's the thing. The determinates, they just produce one crop, in essence, just
right.
about. You know, they grow up, they bloom, they set their tomatoes, there you go.
And I kind of enjoy the indeterminate because I like walking in the greenhouse and having this crazy jungle of tomato plants with fruits, usually, hopefully, all over them. But again, they are never outside. They are always indoors. They start out in the house, and then they move to the greenhouse. My greenhouse isn't super hot, so they have to kind of deal with it. But it seems to be working for them.
Nice. Couple tips: if you do them in a house or a greenhouse, hoop house, or some covered spaces, you might need a little paintbrush help for pollination. If you see a lot of flowers and nobody seems to be developing a tomato, you might try pollinating across a few plants with a little tiny paintbrush. That can really help. The other thing is just even brushing and wiggling the plants. They're used to Mother Nature sending them a few breezes, so you might have to mimic that as well.
Yeah, I give mine a little shake. And there's under the eaves, there's an open space. So I do see insects in there now and again. But it's worked pretty well. One of the other things that comes up with tomatoes is the blossom end rot. And usually what people advise is that you make sure there's enough calcium in your soil, which you should have enough calcium in your soil regardless. But what I noticed was when I was more religious about not letting the plants over dry out, then I didn't get any of that. I didn't get any cracking. I didn't get any blossom end rot. So it was probably a combination of making sure those micronutrients were adequate and not neglecting the plants. How odd. That seemed to really help.
It's tough in a covered space, too, when we have a cold and rainy summer, because now you're battling mold as well, and all of your greenhouse plants can suffer from that, molds or fungus. And if you see anything starting, I can't tell you enough to sacrifice that mm-hmm. plant and get it out of the space, because it is more than likely not going to recover, and you're just sharing it with the rest of the environment in your covered space. So if you see anything starting to mold up or get fungusy, let that go ASAP, and you know, put it either in your trash or burn it. You can compost it if you're a hot composter, but that's really not necessarily the best plan.
Yeah, I don't put any disease material in my compost, period. It doesn't matter. It's just like, nope. I did want to say, I'm back just a quick trip back to the zucchini. So my resident, I'm going to call her my resident expert on growing many things, says she's only tried Easy Pick Gold and Easy Pick Gold 2, and she can't say that she recommends either one in terms of the yellow squash. I've had good luck with Cavilli. And that's really the main one I've had good reliable luck with. So the yellow squash are delicious, but they are a little bit fussy for us. So if you have to try again, try something different.
Yeah. And read carefully when you're buying plants and buying seed that it's really the one for the cool weather and the short season. Even our stalwart territorial seeds and nickel seeds and Johnny seeds, some of these seed companies that are targeting our type of climate, their main audience is the Pacific Northwest, not us. And the Pacific Northwest is another whole layer of warmer and drier than we are. So know that we're on the edge.
Oh, we are so on the edge. So I'll say this one more time. We live in a cool summer climate, and that needs to kind of run your world in terms of gardening and, I guess, in terms of expectations for summer, for other things. It's like, it's going to be cool here, and it's likely going to rain. So I keep things covered, even things that, you know, like our climate. I mean, the lettuce, the greens grow super well here. They stay covered, even so, because it's just like it keeps a little bit of the extra rain off of them. The fava beans, the peas don't get covers, and the garlic doesn't get covers. But boy, there's a lot of things that it seems like just adding that little layer of warmth makes such a huge difference.
So what's going great here? Let's have a little of that. Let's have a little cheer here on the Garden Show. It's a great year for rhubarb.
It was, yes.
This is a prime time. It's a great time to harvest and use it. It's a great time to chop it and freeze it. It's very easy. You don't need to do any processing other than just chop it up so it's easy to use when you thaw it. You can just put it in a bag. You can vacuum pack it. But this is the perfect time. Break the flowers off your rhubarb if you want it to keep producing. And I suppose you could over-fertilize rhubarb, but it seems unlikely.
Yeah.
So that's the rhubarb scene. Tough, easy, satisfying to grow here. The other thing that we're in the season of here in early June are the rhododendrons.
Mm-hmm.
And so the gaudy times are coming on.
Oh, yeah. I love it. I just saw one of the hot pink Northern Lights azaleas in full glory there on HPR. I have had rhododendrons blooming for at least a month through my yard. And right now, the big giant red one is just starting to get going. I have a white one that's in full bloom. And next will be the one you can see it across Eastern Channel when it's in full bloom. And next up after that will be the purple one. I adore them. And then the crazy azaleas I have hot pink, I have bright yellow, and I have orange. I'm like, woohoo, I love it. I don't mind having some bright and crazy colors, especially in shrubs, which shrubs are sweet. You do not have to do a lot of maintenance with them, and they just reward you.
So then comes the next part of rhododendrons. We generally recommend you get your blooms all finished, and then you're going to fertilize again. Remember, it's two times a year when the buds swell in the spring and after flowering is done, but not late in the year. And you'll probably notice that your rhododendrons generally flower, set their seeds. If possible, you remove those little seed inflorescence things because you're going to have a better bloom the next year. If you've got 12 or 13 really large rhododendrons, that can be a tough thing, but do what you can and then fertilize again. And we always say an acid-style fertilizer, but not only an acid-style, not a liquid fertilizer. This was something we learned is that we had people that were buying liquid fertilizer for acid-loving plants. But the problem for rhododendrons is they can't capture enough of it. When you put it on, it just washes away. So you're looking for a granular, and the easiest thing is commercial azalea and rhododendron food, and you can use it on almost all your shrubs except for your lilacs in your yard.
Yeah, don't put it on your lilacs. The other thing to think about with rhododendrons, so you let them bloom, and then if you want to do some shaping and pruning, do it right after they bloom. Because then you're not you enjoyed the flowers from this year, and you're not interfering with next year's flowers. You know, they're going to get going. But I have one that just keeps, despite it was supposed to be 6x6, it's probably 8x12. And so I have to keep kind of like talking it back. And by talking it back, I mean with pruning shears. It's really the only way I can get back to it. And it's nice to get back and get like whole branches out. And I really recommend when you prune is just prune a little bit and walk away, look at it for a while, and then dive back in. So, I mean, I'm very namsy-pamsy about pruning anything. So I definitely like the prune look because you can't put them back on, right, if you screw up. And boy, when I was like in my mid-20s, I screwed up a few of my mother's shrubs when I was feeling super confident. But they came back. Yay.
Yeah, so what's going to happen in the cycle, of course, here is they're blooming now, the rhododendrons, and then the very next thing after they do their seed bit is their flush of new leaves. And they really only do about one flush of new leaves in our climate, and that's fine. And then the next thing from that is they're setting buds for mm-hmm. next year. So by the beginning of August, many of the early rhododendrons already have set their tiny buds, and you'll see toward the end of the summer, you'll see them a little bit bigger, but they are there. So fertilizing in August or September is not going to help you. And pruning in August or September means you're already pruning off the buds that are setting for the following year. Right. So with rhododendrons, you can't really hurt them, but if you want to be on their cycle, that's the progression.
Right. So some other things that I do recommend doing. So my garlic is going great guns, actually. Garlic is super successful.
Good year for
this
garlic,
year.
Yeah.
Yeah, I planted it, of course, last August and September, and it just looks spectacular, actually. And so that I'll give a little bit of side dressing of kind of mixed fertilizer, a little bone meal, a little blood meal just off on the side, and a little compost if I have some ready. I suspect, gosh, I'm kind of wondering if they're going to start setting their little flowers or their big loopy flowers actually pretty soon. And we'll remind you later on in the summer, but you do want to prune those off and eat them. Actually, they make the best pesto.
Yeah, so, you know, we're having an odd year in terms of timing of things. Some things are really late or somewhat late, and some things just seem to be booming. And the garlic might even be ahead. So it might be a year that we're harvesting garlic earlier than we have in the past. And I don't know exactly what that is about, but it is what it is. So I have to do true confessions here. I am losing my seedlings. They are getting mowed down by, I think, slugs, even though I slug-o'd and picked. I planted them as the last thing I did and covered them thinking, okay, it's warm. My bed's ready. You know, I thought I had this all dialed. And I looked under there yesterday, and they are just struggling and bitten. So this is what happens.
Yeah,
I'm rethinking timing. I'm rethinking what should I have started in the greenhouse and planted out as a more sturdy start. I've got a couple of starts in there that I planted out. But a lot of my seedlings have been mowed over because they germinated. I mean, mm-hmm. I saw them, and they look good for a bit. So that's frustrating. Couple things to know. Some of them I can definitely replant. It's not too late for radishes and turnips and lettuces, you know, spinach, those things. Actually, my spinach seems to be surviving the slugs. I don't know why. But so, yeah. So, you know, every summer's different. I'm not exactly sure why I'm having this struggle, but I am, and you might be too, and know that you can replant.
Yeah, definitely. I was going to say, I have the next crop of lettuce already growing in little pots, and I was probably going to start more, and I will do them in pots. One, I don't have any space left, so they're going to follow some of the other plants. And I love fresh lettuce, and as long as I can grow it, I will. So I'll start some new ones of those. I actually have some younger cauliflowers, and I have more Brussels sprouts and things like that just sitting in pots, you know, getting ready. So
when you say getting ready, you mean getting ready to plant out?
Getting ready to plant out. And it's really more like a spatial thing. It's like, okay, these will be ready to go in when I pull this particular crop out. And I'm trying to manage that a little bit more carefully this year. We'll see how successful I am with that. But yeah, when the garlic comes out, I'm going to put in probably broccoli that I'll start ahead. Because actually that worked, it worked pretty well in the greenhouse, and I think it'll work even better outside.
It is nice to stagger your broccoli, because suddenly if you've got 20 broccolis and they all come ready just at that moment, that's a lot to eat fresh. You can always freeze, but that's labor intensive, and mm-hmm. kind of the point of, you know, what we're doing here is growing, is eating fresh vegetables.
Right.
So, you know, that's a key thing. Well, speaking of growing fresh vegetables, I was on, I believe it was last week, and I had talked a little bit about resources. Oh, it was the week before, talked about resources. And I had a chance to check with Lori Adams, and her book, which is all about growing vegetables here in Sitka, is available at Old Harbor Books.
Oh,
if
nice.
folks want to get it. I didn't have a bead at the time on exactly where that was available, but it is, and it's available there. It may be available other places, but I do know that part.
Excellent, excellent.
All right, well, this is almost the end of the Garden Show. We'll be back next week, and in a couple of weeks, we are going to be on, Kitty will be on, and talking about the Cooperative Extension and having Jasmine Shaw in.
Yes.
And talking about all of their incredible services. The research and work that they have done has been terrific.
Right.
Over the years.
So I'm
a
really,
great solution.
Yes, yeah, so I'm really looking forward to having Jasmine in here talking about that. So thanks so much for joining us this week for the Garden Show. It's been our pleasure to talk gardening at you.